This is Jason Nemro, and you're listening to Co and Meander. Another exciting morning. It's what is today? It's like the third. I think it's the 3rd of October, 2024. And the normal morning commute, I put in, I wrote a letter to the Rush. I'm reticent to call it the Rush Family Trust, but it's a trust of that is the land holding, I think. And for this 80 acres at Ragland. And don't know what I'm going to hear back from them. Don't know how often they actually check the mail. I don't know who lives at the official headquarters, or if anybody does. For all I know, here in a couple of weeks, I'll just say, well, there's got to be another way to contact them. And, you know, you got to do your due diligence everywhere. So that's kind of what, that's kind of what I'm up to. Let me think about what I've been thinking about lately. I've been reading in Ether, chapter 9, I believe. And, this has a bit about Akish, and Moroni apparently stuck it in. He just tells you exactly why he, or at least about what he wants you to know of it, which is Omer was a good guy and a good king, and everything prospered under Omer. He had a son named Jared who wanted to be king. I guess Omer wasn't leaving, therefore there wasn't any need for him to be king yet. So he did what on occasion people have done among the Jaredites, which is, lock up or banish. Something akin to, it's called captivity. Don't know exactly what that means from the standpoint of, conditions and things like that, because it seemed like people were living and, they were even having children in captivity. Well, so anyway, I don't know if that had become some kind of a tradition among these people, but, regardless, there it is. And Jared had kind of pulled that stunt. He had taken over pretty much the kingdom. Omer was on some seashore now with a few loyalists. This all seemed, now what we know of it, it all seems like kind of a family affair. It's hard to say because, like, you know, we were only looking at the kings. So Jared the son of Omer took over. So apparently he was unhappy because he didn't have all the kingdom. He only had a part. And we don't have a name for her, but a daughter of Jared. And it's hard to know if she was a wicked little snip from the beginning and had planned something bigger, or if she was just trying to please her father and everything went awry from that kind of a plan. Anyway, so she cooked up this thing, and apparently she had access to old satanic ritual oath-keeping knowledge And she said she's this guy called Akish. And so she put Jared and Akish together along with these old covenants. And Akish apparently had lots of friends and relations that he had some influence over. And this oath, and this is the first time we really hear in a certain note and in larger terms about what the oath was. Mormon, in compiling the Book of Mormon, chose not to bring them up. Apparently this was the same oath that had been administered in the days of Cain. So when you say, well, we've never heard of oaths before, and you go, no, you have. It just wasn't a large part of the biblical record because there were strict rules against these things. You probably remember from the Bible injunctions against oaths at all, especially invoking God or any of God's creations in this, which was the first thing you would do, is you would swear by God that you would do something. And of course, if you didn't do it, then God was entitled to have you destroyed. And of course, the part of they were called secret combinations. The whole part about secret combinations is that these guys were also empowered to act in God's name to destroy you if you didn't keep this oath. So you would do the oath, and then there would be some kind of activity. Sometimes it was a loyalty thing. You know, whoever was in charge and put you under oath this way, the tendency was that they would then ask you to do something unsavory. In this case, it was to kill Omer, Jared's dad, who had been the king over all the land. It was now only king over part of the land, while Jared was king over another part of the land. anyway, so I don't know what exactly happened in all of this, but Akish got his guys together, and of course they swore the oath to be a secret combination. And apparently what Akish did, instead of going after Omer, they decided to go after Jared. So Jared was to be killed. So Jared was killed, murdered. And Akish was put on the throne of that kingdom in his place. Akish, by this time, was a son-in-law of Jared. You know, he and this evil daughter, which is only brought up once more just to kind of give you the whole expanse of exactly what happened. Moroni does that. And this is kind of how it goes. Now ultimately, the sons of Akish, I don't know if they were being channeled by their mother. It really doesn't say, as far as I recall. There starts being a lot of killing. Apparently, a lot of secret combinations happen around this situation. So, there it is. Apparently, it's told that it comes down to 30 people in this whole kingdom. Because everybody's oath sworn to kill somebody for somebody else's advantage. That's the whole point of these secret combinations, is that you enact these so that you can have something. Oops, dang it. Oh, there it is. Good. Okay. And one of the sons of Achish decides he wants to do nothing more with it, takes his friends and relations, and goes off to where Omer is, and joins Omer's group. I don't know if this is a trigger for that happening, but Omer actually takes back all the kingdom, and because of his righteousness and his people's righteousness, things start to turn around a little bit. There starts to be prosperity again, instead of people just trying to get ahead of each other. It isn't lost on me that this is a very good analog to our times. Secret combinations aplenty in high places. I don't know who runs these secret combinations in our times. We all think of the globalists. And the New World Order, though I think the government of the United States of America has been infiltrated by such things? Oh, yes, I do. Right now, in this particular moment, it's just, it's almost time for early voting. Lisa and I are going to go vote soon. And there is, it's interesting. Kamala Harris, this is so secret combination-ish that, it's almost funny. And that's why when people say, well, why aren't you voting for Kamala Harris? You go, it's because she's part of a secret combination. Do I think she's the leader of it? I don't know. Probably not. But she would be willing to, I think she's willingly been the kind of person that would ally herself with a secret combination. Doesn't help that she's a lawyer. Now, that's not uncommon in politics. Many people go into the law and then go into politics. The whole thing is about how she got to the position she's in of being so close to the office of the president, which has grown in great power over the years. In the past, it was not so powerful. It was mostly like a king, kind of a figurehead. But now it's really grown to be this powerful thing. Ooh, I'm just coming to, not quite though, I don't think. I'm not quite to the 80 acres, but I'm getting close. You know, 80 acres is an awfully good sized piece of land. I mean, it's not huge. You can see from one end to the other easily, but, so yeah, I'm just coming up on Raglan. I pass by this piece of property every day that I go into work, and which is a lot. So I'm about ready to go up the hill here. Raglan Hill, which is a part of this thing. This 80 acres encompasses the entirety of Raglan Hill. Lisa and I took a little hike along several years ago on Raglan Hill, and found some old ruins. One of them, the actual bulk of the house was still there. I mean, it had fallen over, and you know, it was just some wooden wood lying over on its side, but it was definitely used to be kind of a cabin. So if I get this 80 acres, I'll become the owner of that too. And maybe I would put that back upright, rebrace it, turn it back into some kind of a shelter. It's already there. I don't feel the need to pull a building permit on a building that's there. Says I'm just shoring it up. I know that's probably skirting the law just a bit, but to be honest, I don't know how these things are supposed to be handled. I don't like to be taxed for something like that. Regardless, Kamala Harris, I don't know if it's her. The powers that be, the Democratic Party, I think, has become overtly a larger vessel for secret combinations. Now, I'm not saying that the Republican Party is free of this. Not even beginning to say that. I think it's all corrupt. Anyway, so we're seeing this today. Joe Biden was put aside. It's interesting because I think he was a secret combination choice. I think Kamala Harris is a secret combination choice. The fact that they're putting these people forward, the first thing was Joe Biden said that he was going to put minorities into positions of into good positions. I'd say positions of authority, but a vice president is not a position of authority. A vice president doesn't have to do anything except take care of tie votes in the Senate, which this last little bit it's been a tie in the Senate. And so often, and so when that happens, the president of the Senate, which is the vice president of the United States, is able to cast the tie-breaking vote on things that are just straight majorities. And she's been able to use that a few times. And it hasn't been brought up much. The Republicans occasionally will say, well, they're, you know, she will say, oh, I'm for this or I'm for that, which is a change of her doing that. Of course, people have become so accustomed to politicians changing their minds with the shifting winds of what they hope to be popular opinion that I don't think making hay about it is even very interesting to either side. Because a lot of people do it, which is sad. It means that these people who are being elevated to Congress, either to the House of Representatives or the Senate, they don't represent anything except what they think can keep them in their seat and therefore having some influence, some power. And this is how it tends to go. The really telling thing in all of this has been how, you know, people say, oh, it's so polarized. You go, well, it's interesting in that loyalties seem to be to party. You know, when I talked about the fact that the Senate is kind of 50-50 right now. I think there's technically, one more Democrat than there is Republicans in the Senate, and that makes it so that Kamala Harris was able to vote some tiebreakers, which under normal circumstances she is no longer a member of the Senate. She just steps in at certain times, and when there's a State of the Union address, she sits in a seat as the president of of the Senate, which is kind of funny. Anyway, when the country was started, of course, the Constitution doesn't acknowledge the presence of parties, different parties and different groups. But almost immediately, there started being parties. They might have started out a little informally, but that happened. And when there was an election for president, the person who won became president. The person that came in second place was the vice president. And the only function of being the vice president, besides being the president of the Senate when necessary, didn't really have a function. They were just supposed to be available if something bad happened to the president, to that there would be no weird crisis. You know, there would be no problem. There would already be somebody that had been chosen to take the president's place. I think this came from the fact that the presidency was supposed to be kind of a Republican substitute for a monarch. And there was usually an heir already established if anything happened to a king. So that there wouldn't be any infighting as to who was going to be the next monarch, the next ruler. So, anyway, and that's the way it is. It's warped over time, and to the vice presidency actually being an office and you having a place to be, and that you are part of the administration of the government, which is hilarious because, yeah, it's back in the old days, John Adams and Thomas Jefferson ran for president after George Washington said, "I'm done. You know, you guys can do that. I'm not going to run for president again." In the past, you could run for president as many times you wanted. The original Constitution had no stipulation for term limits. It just wasn't there. And when people put in term limits, I'm not very happy with it, because that actually, I think that actually gives more power to the machine to do things, because it's obviously going to be the machine deciding who runs for office. Like I said, you know, when it comes to secret combinations, the biggest problem with Donald Trump right now is that Donald Trump became the president without going through the process that evil secret combinations, the political parties, have established to vet people to make sure they are loyal. You know, just like in the old days of administering the oath, and that if you didn't keep the oath of pretty much loyalty to the leader of the secret combination, you could be destroyed, you could be killed. At least, I don't know what else would happen. Anyway, maybe put your kids into slavery or something. I don't know. This was somewhat pulled together by the fact that, you know, they always say, "Well, you know, this guy's a party hack." And you go, most of them are party hacks. And most of them, and the funny thing is that, well, can you be honest? At most elections, everybody that's even on the ballot has been reasonably well vetted through their individual parties to be loyal to the party. And so, you know, it's just what it is. And you just kind of become used to it. And it's really, you know, they say, well, it's a lesser of two evils you're going for. And you usually vote along straight party lines. Almost, you know, they did a whole lot of stuff. Unless you really know somebody that you like in the other party that's running for an office. That usually only happens in local elections. It's okay for you to vote for them. I have to be honest. I tend to like libertarians when I'm just on my own, which I'm not. I always will vote with my wife. I have made a commitment to do this. My wife has made no such commitment. Lisa is definitely a person that exercises what I call the ultimate veto, which is she can always just say no. And most of the time, those things don't happen. I want to share my life with her. And I decided at some point, it was probably a few elections ago, that we needed to get together and decide who we were going to vote for. Am I a real fan of Trump? Not particularly. You know, like most people, I think that they would love to have more choices, which is hilarious because when given more choices, nobody would actually win. The United States, I don't think has the capacity much, and I don't think most people do. I don't think it's just an American thing to really vote for more than to have more than two parties. I used to align strongly with the biggest third party. They're all just collectively called third parties, which is a Libertarian Party, and they always put up a candidate for this third party. It was interesting this year, this election coming up, Donald Trump went for the nomination. Actually, Donald Trump and Robert F. Kennedy Jr., RFK Jr., went up for the nomination for the Libertarian Party. But they weren't going to change their stances on anything. They just wanted to have that party behind them. And so they went for somebody else. I don't really know the guy. And, not that I've known the past few. I didn't. The last Libertarian president I voted for was Ron Paul, because I really like Ron Paul. He's more of an economic guy, but let's be honest. Most of the problems in the United States are economic problems and people screwing around with things and trying to raise taxes and stuff like that. And I'm sorry, I kind of got off the track. Donald Trump does not appear to be part of a secret combination. And that's what I like about him. And that's why ultimately I am going to vote for him. You know, you can say, well, I haven't really decided yet. You go, yes, I have. Says, am I going to vote for Donald Trump? Yes. Number one, it's because that's who my wife is also going to vote for. And because I don't think he is sworn to globalists, secret combinations, things like that. I don't think he's a part of that. Now, Kamala Harris, on the other side, is interesting. She was never vetted for her position. She She never had to go through a primary. She was simply appointed the nominee. Mostly because Joe Biden, the standing incumbent president, will typically, unless he just doesn't want to, or he, well, it's always been a he, if they didn't want to stand for the presidency again, then there would be a primary called and everything would be done. There was really no primary. Joe Biden said he wanted to go for the presidency one more time, even though he was really giving every indication that he was getting mentally incapacitated, starting to have some problems. Everybody said it was garbage. He's sharp as a tack. He's fantastic. It really had nothing to do with me. I didn't vote for him the first time. I wouldn't have voted for him this time because he is I don't know where the term swamp came from. Trump used it. He hasn't used it much since then, which is sad because honestly, I think it's powerful. And I think it speaks to the whole idea of not being caught up in these secret combinations. One of the more obvious ones is globalists. So people who want everything to be, you know, kind of a one world government, everybody living under the same system. Can I be honest? There will be kind of a one world government, kind of. When Christ is on the earth, everybody who is a leader will have to swear loyalty to Jesus Christ as the king of this world. And they will be bound to whatever he dictates, they will have to do. One of the big things is going to have to be, well, you're going to have to give people their liberty, which is something a lot of big people don't like to have. Just recently, a former presidential candidate, John Kerry, I forget what he does now. He is involved in some way in the current administration. I don't think he is like a cabinet secretary. I think he spent some, I don't remember what he's done. He may have spent some time as the Secretary of State to like Clinton or somebody like that way back in the past. Regardless, John Kerry is somebody who says, oh, we need to do something about this First Amendment. We just can't have people being able to say whatever they want. That's not right. You know, it's this whole attack on misinformation which is basically, people can't say something that those in power don't like to hear. And you go, this is the First Amendment for a reason. It is so basic to being able to run a republic that it was enshrined first, right up there with religion. You are allowed to have your own mind and to speak your own mind and to speak, and especially the government wasn't. The First Amendment's all about government restrictions. Government wasn't allowed to retaliate against you. Well, it's found a convenient surrogate in social media. So many people express themselves on social media that social media companies are private. Well, I guess if you're on the stock market, you're really no longer private. You're kind of a public, a public entity, a public corporation. And in being so, you know, you're, I guess you have more of a civic responsibility than if you were just, you know, a private company owned by some group or some people. That's why it's like, you know, don't become a corporation, even though the tax benefits are awesome, to have kind of an LLC, which is kind of an evil little contrivance to make it so that you can do something and then you can blame it on your corporation, and your corporation can go bankrupt, but it doesn't have anything to do with you. You just can't get money out from it. And the corporation can be sued, but to a certain extent, an employee of the corporation can distance themselves from the whole situation, even though you may very well have been the founder of it and the chief executive officer of it. You can divorce yourself from it because it's its own freestanding entity. I've never been a fan of corporations by and large. It was good to, but it was usually short-term corporations to accomplish something like the building of a road, a bridge, a canal, things like that, like some kind of larger public work when, there really wasn't a good mechanism for getting this done. So, anyway, I'm not going to get into it. Try to stay out of that weeds too much. Anyway, it's interesting that John Kerry has been going against the First Amendment to the Constitution and saying that it needs to be changed because several things need to have been declared not okay. You know, people are saying, oh, you can't cry fire in a crowded theater, and you go, well, you can, but something bad's going to happen to you. And then they've come back and said, well, you can't do hate speech. And you go, wow, that's probably something that the First Amendment was specifically supposed to make sure that you can do. Now, that doesn't mean that people have to treat you nice. That doesn't mean that a newspaper or a magazine or a website can simply just say, you know what, I'm not going to publish that. Although people kind of try to perceive it that way. What those amendments are for is they are there to tell government what it must do or what it cannot do. The government cannot prescribe speech. It cannot become a law that you cannot say something. And that's been kind of worked around. All the hate speech laws that have been allowed to stand are interesting because it mostly had to do with, well, if somebody committed a crime against somebody else, you know, there was a certain penalty for like, assault, which is verbal. That when you assault somebody, you can bring them to law for it. Assault and battery means you actually physically did something. An assault is basically a threat to do something. Oh, you know, at least that's my perception of it. Anyway, what these hate speech laws did was that they added additional penalties if they felt like you were part of an oppressed group and they were assaulting you due to your oppressed status. And so therefore, there could be additional penalties. And that's where hate speech really got into things. If you committed a murder and that person was a black person and you were not, and you had perhaps made some kind of a statement in the past that you really hated black people, And so people would say, well, that murder was racially motivated. It was decided at some point in the past, which I think is stupid, that you should get an extra penalty in the penalty phase of whatever trial you were going through because this was racially motivated. You know, we didn't want white people just going around willy-nilly killing black people. So that's where the hate, I think that's kind of at least the genesis, if not the track of hate speech. And a lot of people now say that that's also something that's not protected by the First Amendment in the Bill of Rights is you can't do hate speech. And you're going, oh my gosh. It says no wonder people are just saying, oh, I can't talk about this. I can't talk about that. Kind of like George Orwell's 1984, actually amending the language so that you can't even utter and almost at some point not be able to think about things that the powers that be, the government perhaps, doesn't want you to say or to think. So, and we're getting this. See, and the funny thing is, we're getting this from powerful Democrats. Now it's interesting. I don't think John Kerry even thinks about of going for elected office anymore. He's happy to be a powerful figure in a presidential administration, which is what he is right now. And, you know, so he isn't saying these kinds of things, I think, to lift his own balloon directly. Now, he certainly wants to be supportive of the party, the Democratic Party, which is now where the administration of the government is pulled. And it gets him on talk shows. It, you know, he gets a lot of money for his position. Another thing about secret combinations. They exist for, and this was from the it's all through the Book of Mormon. It's not just an ether for this part of secret combination. It's for power and gain. You want to have more power or you want to have more money. And, so yeah, when you see people going for this kind of thing, you should say these guys are kind of part of a secret combination. They're going out and being supportive of the larger group, either the Democratic Party or whichever party they're a part of, and their own personal aggrandizement, power and gain. Always happens this way. Always happens this way. That's why when anything is happening and people are really moving, make sure you do that. There's one term that's been used a lot over the years to describe it, which is follow the money. And you go, whoever's going out there and really, really doing things, even if you think they don't have any ulterior motives, smell around and see if you can figure out where the money's coming from. And if that person is basically going after the money. So, you've got that going. People who want to tear down basically the restrictions on government that the Constitution and the Bill of Rights put into place, which are vital to help us on some level eke out what liberty we can, ability to do what we please, Of course, there are laws set up to make us decent, make us not kill each other without punishment. You know, the whole point of punishment is to get you to stop doing something that you shouldn't be doing. You know, murder must be punished. Back in the old days, it was if you killed somebody, you had to give up your own life. Now we've watered it down to where, well, you know, you'll spend some time in prison. And, you know, if you're a good boy in prison, if you don't cause too many problems, we will let you out. And that's really a great boon for the secret combinations, because the secret combinations can affect things like paroles and stuff like that. And because it happens all the time. And anyway, so the whole point now for my part in this upcoming presidential election between Kamala Harris, who kind of through trickery was brought up to be the Democrat candidate for president. I don't know why most of the Democrats haven't freaked out and said, absolutely not. They all seem to be falling into line and saying how wonderful she is and all that stuff. The mainstream media is just, they just love Kamala Harris, and they don't challenge her. You know? You would almost think she was some kind of scary figure. Hillary Clinton gave off this vibe of being a scary figure that anybody who crossed her would end up face down in some river or reservoir somewhere. Now, you know, that's that I don't know how substantiated that is, but it seems like certain people who turned on her in her administration end up getting killed. I remember it was called Travelgate at the time. This was a billion years ago. But, yeah, all of a sudden somebody disappeared. And Epstein, who was running a child trafficking, child pornography island, and was jetting in powerful people, who, I'm sorry, that's almost one of the earmarks of a secret combination among the rich and the powerful, is that you also dabble in the occult a little bit, and you dabble in child sexual trafficking. You just do that. It's part of how you get the power that you get, but also that at any given moment, if you turn on those who gave you power, they will all of a sudden bring up, oh, you were a child molester. You did this, and we have this evidence. Here it is. You're going to jail, or you're going to be destroyed. These are the powerful ways that those in ultimate charge keep you under their thumb. You will not get power unless you have dabbled in these things. And they keep good documentation of it. It's not supposed to get out. That's why I love Alex Jones so much. Alex Jones is a fantastic check against corruption. He will dig around and he will find stuff. He's been talking about the whole Epstein Island thing for years. I remember listening to one of his radio programs, and he spent almost the entire time talking about this island that the rich and powerful would be jetted into this. You know, they'd be wined and dined, and then they would partake of Epstein's island experience, which was unspeakable sexual acts with children because, you know, children can be molded to being little sex toys, and but it's much more, you know, I'm sorry, I'm not going to get into that. All right. But yes, this is almost part of that oath now to get you to do this, is that you will partake in our secret, deep secret acts, and, you know, they're fun, and they are, you know, and they'll say, oh, it's okay. You know, this is a little kid that we've groomed to do this, and, they're okay with it. You know, so anyway, I don't know how they eliminate these children later on so they don't say anything. I don't know how that works. They might actually get brought into the whole thing. I think that's what Kamala Harris was. I think she was preyed upon when she was young. You know, everybody talks about, well, she used to be Willie Brown's little girl. And, you know, and you go, oh, well, you know, she is married to a guy that there's, you know, and you say, oh, well, this is all just hearsay. You go, well, I don't know. Sometimes it has some basis in fact that Kamala Harris's husband, I forget his name, he is a non-entity. He had a child by the maid. And did this cause a problem? No. Why? Because they're all wrapped up in this thing. So Kamala Harris may have been one of these Epstein Island kiddies or something akin to that. She certainly, as a very young person, was groomed for offices. And so she is well versed in what you say to pander to voters. Like right now, everybody says, this is amazing. She doesn't say much of anything. She does a lot of circular talking. It's all about flattery. It's all to get you to say, oh, that sounds so good. She's gotten really good at saying things that don't mean anything, but that sound good. Anyway, so there's that. She's this amazing thing. How else talk about this thing? Anyway, and she just acts like it and ekes like it, and she'll say whatever she has to say to get your vote. You know, she's definitely a part of a very easy corruption, which is to encourage people to come into the United States illegally. And the whole thing is we will give you some perks because, you know, we control a lot of money. We can print as much as we want. We're gonna actually help you when you come here. We're gonna slap a refugee sticker on your head and say, oh, they're refugees. And so we have all kinds of programs that help refugees. And, of course, these people, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, says, you know, this is all coming from the Democrat Party because the Republicans don't think of you as refugees. They think of you as illegal aliens. It says, so are these guys, when presented with the opportunity to be able to vote, and in a lot of places, you can vote if you're present in the United States, whether you're really a citizen or not. We have really weak citizenship rules. It doesn't mean that you can become a citizen easily, but you can get most of the perks of being a citizen just by being present. And you don't have to show any ID particularly. All you have to do is just get a voter registration card, which in many states doesn't require anything besides, you know, showing up someplace, you know, and filling out a form. And then they give you a card. And when you present that card, you can vote. You can vote. You can cast your vote. And of course, this is all to get more Democrat votes so they can win and win permanently. That's what the Democrats really want. If I go through this stuff, if I go to, you know, and you're going, boy, Nemro, you are creating this interesting web of stuff. And you go, it's, you know, and they go, oh, it's a conspiracy theory. And you go, okay, but it all comes together. You know, when Alex Jones says this stuff, I tend to believe him because he's pretty good at collecting this information. Anyway, and you're going, oh, he's one of those deplorables. And you go, well, you know what? When the people who have the microphone and want to affect their own plans to enrich themselves, and this is all just about enriching yourself. How do these politicians who ostensibly only get paid a bit of a salary while they're in office, how do they end up with millions and millions and millions of dollars that they're worth, and everybody just kind of shrugs and goes, that's just the way it is. And you go, you know, I only amass things with my salary, you know, however much money I'm making is really the only money I have to play with. How do these guys get millions and millions of dollars to play with? In the state of New Mexico, for instance, our legislators are not paid. We only have a part-time legislature. There's a session, there's two sessions, and I think they get kind of a stipend for doing that, but it's certainly nothing close to being named. But you know, they go up to Santa Fe and they're wined and they're dined, and all of a sudden good things start happening to them. And they have good, you know, they make a really good, you know, they seem to come out of these things pretty well off. And you're going, well, it can't be from the salary that they get from doing it. Of course, they all usually are independent businessmen or independently wealthy to begin with. That kind of makes it tricky. Anyway, so how do these people do that? And you go, oh, they're being wined and dined, and they're getting paid off, and they're getting junkets, and they're getting, you know, I get to go and do this and do that, and to know what's going on. And it's like, I don't know anything about that. You know, and people just kind of act like that there's nothing to that. You go, you know, this is pretty serious business. I said, how does that happen? You go, well, to get into the upper echelons of government is to be a paid minion of other people. Other people will make it worth your while. Anyway, so secret combinations today, we've got them. And boy, are they off doing the dirty for power and gain. Are some people getting killed? Sure. Are some kids being raped and pillaged and destroyed? Sure. And this is all in trying to buy loyalty. At the end of the day, it's all about loyalty. And it just really it's really become apparent at this one. Kamala Harris is where she is, campaigning as the Democrat nominee for president, with having been, having skirted every rule to get her there. And you're going, is she really that good? And you look at her and you really go, no, I don't think she really is that good. I don't think she is. I think her vice president pick, Walz, I think he is such a conflicted, mess of a man that I feel for him. I feel for him. I think he would love to stay above the fray, but he decided that he wanted to go for this, you know, and I think he has kind of a public duty sort of gene in him, but I think it's being used against him. If he doesn't become the vice president, I think he's just going to disappear as somebody of little consequence. I think his political aspirations are going to be essentially over. He might be able to get back in on his state. His state seems to like him. He was very much a person that was very, he is a very strong leftist with some down-home cooking vibes to him, which served him well in, what is he, Minnesota or Wisconsin? Minnesota, I think. And, you know, he's, I really don't know where to put that. Anyway, it doesn't matter because it becomes the whole thing of who's going to be it. I think Kamala Harris has been somebody's girl for a while. And I think she has played the game set before her. And that circumstances, more than anything else, put her into this position. And everybody who says, oh, she's just so amazing. Oh, this is so wonderful. We're going to have our first Black Indian president. Aren't we so progressive? We are certainly not racist. And you're like, well, okay, you can say that, I suppose. And that's mostly what that is. I mean, she got the vice presidency in the first place because she was, quote, Black. And you're going, well, how Black is she? And you go, you know, we don't need to do gradations of this. Says, I don't know how she, you know, she was a really extremely failed presidential candidate. The leftists like her because she was willing to say what impresses leftists, and she'd be happy to go for communism if it got her political goals. So anyway, tell ya. Here we are. Where am I? Six, pump six. Probably a good time to stop. This is Jason Emerald. You've been listening to a long version. So yeah, am I voting for Trump? Yeah, because I don't think he's a part of a secret combination particularly. At least not a governmental one. And the way they fight against him and try to destroy him just makes me more sure that he is a person that's willing to try to fight against the powers that be. Now, in 4 years, you can't accomplish a lot. He couldn't accomplish a lot the first four, but at least it will get us four more years down the road without those people having total control over the situation like they've had it right now, you know. Anyway, so this is Cohen Meander. I'm Jason Nemro. Have a great day.